Okay, so a while back, I had I guess it was technically a series of MCU fics that were fairy tale fusions, I'm gonna say. And I've reached a point where I don't think I'm actually going to finish the series. So, here are all of my thoughts, headcanons, etc., in not fic form. Woo! So part one was The Changeling, which was about Steve and how he was technically he was a changeling. And the reason he was so sick growing up is because he grew up in New York City, where there's a bunch of cold iron in like all of the buildings, and his mom, being a proper Irish woman, realized the truth that like she her son was taken, and but she so she knew the legends about the Fae and all of that, and she was like, okay, my son was replaced here, but I'm still going to raise this child. I'm still going to do my best for them. And she did. She did her best for Steve, but she also told him all of the old stories. That's what he grew up on. And so when he finally got old enough, and she was like, so all of that, the first part of the series, Steve goes through the whole movie. He gets the Erskine formula, which is actually magic because Erskine was a mage of some sort. Bucky falls, but he falls into the ice, and Steve is part of winter, so he can kind of. There's something there that he thinks Bucky. There's still a chance that Bucky fell into the ice, that he fell into the snow, he fell into winter. And so when he brings the plane down, that's him trying to go into winter. He does it deliberately because as a changeling, he does have this connection to the magical world. And the next story in the series that I was going to write was actually the second part of Steve's story, in which he was in the Winter Court. Now, the Winter Court, as I was writing it for this story, lots of titles, lots of masks, lots of you're never quite sure who is who, very like with an atmosphere of high political intrigue, but also like this is a game that is absolutely fatal. And Steve goes into it in a fairly good position because he goes into the Winter Court as a champion of from the war, from like the champion of America, and he has as a changeling, his status is determined by how much influence he has in the mortal world, and he has a lot of influence in the mortal world. But he starts going, like, starts playing this game with Winter, and but he doesn't know how to play the game, is the thing. He's always been a, like, hey, I can take a punch. Hey, I can keep going. And he's a good strategist on the battlefield, but this is all like, well, to put it one way, it's Natasha's game, not his. So he makes some mistakes, and at the same time, the war has ended, and because he has died, his influence in the mortal world has started to fade, and so he hits a stumbling block, and he finds Bucky, but by the time he finds Bucky, and it's not just that he has to find Bucky, it's that he has to find Bucky and win both of their freedom. And so he is barely keeping his feet under him, and Bucky at this point is mind whammied, I'm gonna say. Like, not in the Winter Soldier type of mind whammied, but in the this is magic and he's a human in the magic court, and like, he maybe he doesn't have his memories, but also maybe he is convinced that he's like a servant or a plaything or a whatever, and he's convinced, like, he doesn't. If I would actually write it, I would figure it out. But since this is a not fic, I'm gonna gloss over it. The good news is that Steve finds an ally. He finds an ally in one of the human changelings, and the human changelings of the court are a little like, they fulfill the position of messengers of the court. They also fill the position of, like, court jesters and entertainment. And there is one person in the court. He is possibly the court, like, a court painter. He's an artist. And so Steve kind of notices this guy and talks with him a few times early on. And as the story progresses, you realize that this is the original Steve. Now, human changelings in the court, they don't really have any real status until they can find their name, which is very, very rare. But if they can find their name, then they are basically full members of the court in themselves. That's how they earn their place. Steve slash Captain America, Changeling Steve, comes in, tries to find Bucky, is going through his whole deal. Human Steve subtly starts to help him, starts to teach him the ways, because Human Steve is like, hey, I know that you were born a Fae, but you're also more human than most of the people here. Even including the other human changelings. And they get along really well. They have the same vibe that either of them have with Bucky, because Bucky, being a human, has kind of been lumped in with the other human changelings. He is of that same rank, which is basically zero rank. They are playthings. They are toys. They are entertainment. They are at the whims of the court. And so there comes a point where Captain America is like, okay, I found Bucky, and now I realize that this person is the original Steve, who should have been Bucky's best friend, who should have been all of these things. Oh, side note, Human Steve is not quite Captain America levels of fit, but he is healthy. He is what Steve would have been if he had not been terribly sick, but also did not get the super serum. He's a good guy. Normal physique, I guess. So Captain America is like, you know, has this whole guilt thing going on. And at this point, Steve is also figuring it out, going, oh shit, I think that's who I was switched with. And they both kind of go to each other, willing to, like, wanting to fix it, even if it means, like, giving up their own position. Captain America is willing to give up Bucky, going, he was supposed to be your friend. I can look after him. But at this point, Captain America doesn't think he can rescue Bucky. He's gotten so low, he does not see a way out. And at least if Bucky is with Steve, then he's going to have an ally. He's going to be protected. And Steve is all, like, guilt and this is how it should have been originally, and maybe I can get them both out of the court someday, but it'll cost me. And then Steve, counterpart, is like, you were who, like, you had my whole life, and I don't regret anymore, that I lost that life because I've never known it, but now you're here, and I'll do what I can for you, and because I don't want the only person who, clearly my mom loved you and all of that, so I'm not going to let everything, all the work she did and all the good things that you did go to waste. I'm going to make sure that you get your friend and get out of here. And they both come to each other and try to propose all this, and they realize that they're both talking around each other, trying to do a self-sacrifice thing, and they're like, okay. And then Bucky is probably gonna step in and go, you're both idiots. And if it was that type of fic, there would probably be a threesome in there somewhere. Then, as the three of them are trying to figure out the details of getting people free, getting people out of basically servitude, because two of them are in servitude, and Captain America has very little idea of what is going on in the court, but he's trying to protect them as much as he can with the status that he does have. An emissary, a sorcerer, a creature from the human lands, from Earth, comes to the Winter Court and either offers something to the queen or does something to trick the queen, and the queen pays off that debt with Bucky. And this throws a huge wrench in their plans. Steve has just enough, Steve isn't there when this whole thing is going down. Steve and Captain America, both of them, neither of them are there. But between the two of them, they learn a couple of things. One, that this is the guy is possibly from the Norse or possibly from Russia. From the north, that's how they connected to the winter court rather than the summer or any other power. But they are also very tied in with the human lands. They are a human, I think, but neither of Steve nor Captain can figure it out. They basically know that Bucky is gone. So at this point, Captain America is basically well, I have no idea what to do now. I've gotten myself in so deep that I can't just vamoose. And also, my body is still in the Arctic Circle. If, like, he, at some point, Steve learns that, he could potentially leave, but the fact that he rammed his plane into the ice is actually one of the things trapping him there. It is a valid way to get to the Winter Court, but it's also like it that was a double-edged sword. That was an out of the frying pan into the fire situation, or some metaphor like that. So the captain gives Steve his name. I don't know whether they would talk it out first and whether Steve would go to the Queen and claim his name. I don't know what exactly the rules for that would be. If I actually wrote the story, I would figure it out. But again, glossing over it, Steve gets his name. He gets a full place among the court. He is, like, he takes on that, you know, he comes into his own in a way. The Steve that we have known throughout this whole story, is actually pretty happy where he is, apart, like, you know, throughout the story, he had long come to terms with the fact that he was not going back to the human world, and even if he did, he wouldn't be happy there. That's not the world he grew up in, that's not the world he knows. The problem with this is that the captain is now diminished even further. He's still a member of the court rather than an outsider to the court like the changelings or like some other factor, I don't know. But because the name was his and because of like magic rules and stuff, he starts to fall. He has fallen in favor. Until the end of the movie when they find the ice in the plane, and at that point, Steve or the captain or someone realizes that they're thawing out Captain America, and at this point, the captain is like, is very much like, Steve, you can go home. This is where I truly belong. And he, again, the captain is not happy in the court. Steve actually is, but he's not, but he's subtler about it, I guess. He's had to learn to be very subtle growing up in the winter court, to be fair. But now that the captain does not have a name, and does not have, like, even though his body is being dug out of the ice, he doesn't have a, like, he still needs a name to go back to be. And in the end, he claims Captain America as his title. That's who they wake up. They wake up Captain America. Steve Rogers may as well not exist. And I'm gonna play a little bit with the comics here in that maybe in this version, the identity of Captain America was still a secret. That Steve Rogers was just, you know, a man in the unit and nobody knew who exactly was Captain America. And so when Steve wakes up, it solidifies that people start forgetting about Steve Rogers in favor of remembering Captain America. That's the cost. Now I'm going to jump to a different plot idea here because this is a whole universe, but it does tie into Steve. In Steve's original story, Peggy Carter was the virtue diligence. Peggy Carter, when Steve woke up, Peggy Carter was in a nursing home, could not always remember herself, all of that. At that point, she was no longer diligence. Diligence had moved on, had become a new persona in the world. Each generation has a persona of diligence. And the next generation, diligence was Pepper Potts. And this was going to tie into Tony's story as well. That she helped guide Tony into, like, there's a reason that Stark Industries, like, kept going with Tony in a cave in Afghanistan, and then Tony coming back and declaring a complete 180 for his company and all of that. And that was Pepper. That was Diligence. But how Diligence moved from being Peggy Carter to Pepper Potts, that's a story in itself. So how that goes is that Margaret Carter had to keep going, had to keep being diligent her whole life. And eventually she gets to a point where, one, her human form just can't keep going, can't keep up the constant push. And two, she has lived a full life. She is ready to rest. Not in a final death rest, but ready to retire, basically. And she knew that she was Diligence. She knew what the cost was of giving that up, but she also could see her own power waning. And being a virtue, having her presence in the world, having her presence in the world, period, was a good thing. But having her active and being diligent and enforcing her virtue is a lot stronger than just her existing. So it makes perfect sense for her to lay aside her task and take up the cost as her final task. So she knew that she was going to give up a piece of herself, and in that, her ability to retain some of her memories. She is strong enough that she still sometimes has herself, but that piece of her leaving to become, and I'm not sure whether it's Pepper Potts being born or Pepper Potts coming into her own. I'm inclined to say the second, that the virtue went to someone who most embodied that virtue, gave them the option, and Pepper accepted the mantle, and maybe she's just going into college or something like that. And she accepts the mantle, becomes more of herself, and spreads her virtue, spreads diligence in the world. She becomes the very best at what she does constantly. And I was going to have a conversation where Diligence talks to Tony. Because here's the thing, the reason Pepper ended up as Tony's PA is partially because of the company thing, but also because he is a key person, not only after he makes the deal, but before it as well. He is very diligent, but in a very weird way. Like, he can get very focused on his own projects, and she saw the way he was a keystone for first his company and through his company, a good chunk of the world, saw how that could turn one way or the other. And I'm tempted to make Obadiah something or other. I can't remember if I did in the story. I want to say that he was a human, but now I kind of want to retcon that, or I don't know. Diligence goes to Tony, and it's one of the reasons that he can be so productive is that she is in close proximity to him. But another reason is that, like, not anybody could stand that. Steve could do that. He had the will, the strength of will to take this virtue's power and use it, not just let it use him. And Tony is one of those people. And at some point after he makes his deal, he would notice that she's not entirely human. And he would confront her about that. It would probably be after the whole mess with Obadiah dying and the Ironmonger, and after things have started to cool down and Pepper is like, you know, the stocks are going to drop from this. And he makes his speech saying, I am Iron Man. And she's just like, well, at least and see, at this point, Pepper is kind of proud of him because that is owning up to what he did and saying that he, in his own Tony way, saying that he is going to continue, which is very diligent. That is something that, like, so maybe there was a little bit of a push from Pepper, because being a virtue, she doesn't approve of lying in general. I mean, she understands it, but it's not her style. And Coulson there is, like, being also a changeling, can see what has happened to Tony, can see that he made a deal, can see that Pepper is a virtue, and he's just like, okay, I understand why you sent me, Fury, because of course you did. But also, why me? Yeah. The other person I had a headcanon for was Natasha. And through Natasha, Bucky a little bit. But I'll get to that in a moment. So Natasha was born completely human. She did not make a deal to become what she is. She is not a... She's not like Tony, either before or after the Red Room. But the one of the things that the Red Room did to her is basically send her on a quest. And by quest, I do mean a magical fairy tale quest. She was a Gretel in Hansel and Gretel. She was the little lost girl who came upon Baba Yaga's hut. She was the little match girl, only all the ones that became the little match girl failed the experiment. They, the Red Room, were looking to tap into this magical power and harness it. And one of the ways that they could do that was by putting someone through these patterns, because after the pattern was complete, after the story was complete, the child in question still has all the magical potential. And so they decided to go with young children because, one, longer lifespans for their operatives after the fact, two, children are more manipulatable. And then they went with girls because the type of story that girls normally get are the ones where they are obedient and diligent and clever, but not violent. Violence, their opinion was, that violence can be taught, but trying to harness a violent creature, that's dangerous. That's a point where there will always be that question there of, is it really tame? And the Red Room, part of this bargain, they needed a story that was manipulatable, a story that they could run through multiple times, and that's why they needed Bucky. Bucky being the spirit from winter, the fierce creature that is tamed, or that is, I don't know, that is the teacher, that is the tamer, that is the... And here I would do some research into Russian fairy tales. I want to say there's one where a girl, like, sleep in the same bed as a bear. for 3 nights without looking or where. Anyway, here is, again, if I was writing the story, I would do the research and I would figure it out. Glossing over it! That they needed Bucky for that. So, Natasha is, I'm going to label them a princess. She is a heroine. She is a child of fate. And she has been taught to use that power, that potential, to twist it to her own ends. And that's why she's such a good actress, because what she is falling into different roles, being what the story wants her to be for a short time. But it's also genre savviness. She is manipulating the story as much as the story is manipulating her. I could never decide whether I wanted Clint to be completely human or completely non-human. Part of that is because I couldn't decide if he was non-human, what legends he would be from. Obviously, he would be an archer of some sort, but I didn't want to go for the European Northern legends anymore because I've already pulled from that a lot. And he would be one of the last stories I wrote. So I kind of left that to come up with later. It is quite possible that he is completely human and ended up with this group of magic-touched people because he grew up in a circus and just learned some stuff. Maybe the circus that he was a part of was a circus of the weird. Maybe the fortune teller or the snake charmer or the bearded lady or whoever was the magical one, and he just hung out with the right people to learn some stuff. But he never made a deal like Tony. He just knows how to act. On that same note, Thor, I had mixed ideas about. He was going to have some very different reactions to each of them because as a magical being, he can recognize other magical beings. But like that initial fight when he lands on the plane and then fights with Tony and Steve in the forest, that was going to be very different. Because he would be able to tell that Tony was touched by magic and also a chosen of diligence. And then when Steve shows up and is a changeling, but a changeling who has, like, by the time we get to that point in the story, Steve has reclaimed the title of Captain America, and that has, it has a lot of repercussions. And Thor would know all of those repercussions. He would treat the captain as a honored equal from day one. And he does that a little bit in the Avengers movie. But even more so. I don't think I ever go into Bruce in the stories that I wrote. Bruce was someone who, like Thor and Hawkeye, I could never decide whether I wanted Bruce to be a magician and trying to replicate Erskine's magic because he knew about magic, or whether that was the reason it all went wrong. That he could follow the steps. And now, later, I'm inclined to go the latter, that Bruce was purely a scientific mind. And he had all of the details of Erskine's formula, all everything. That somehow he ended up with the secret notebook that was all of the details, but he didn't know the magic behind it. So when he tries to replicate this super soldier serum, he gets the magic part of it wrong, and he summons a berserker spirit into himself. That was going to be the case either way. It's really just whether he knew it was a berserker spirit or not. Hence the Hulk. And I might have had some notes about why the Hulk is big and green, like him actually being a forest troll. Or it may have just been some hand-wavy BS for the berserker spirit. Either way, I don't have to figure it out now, because that is basically the end of my notes. That's where the series would go. I was going to end it after Avengers, with everybody, like, coming together, and, like, I wanted a bunch of short pieces. I wasn't going to have a huge overarching story for the final. I was going to gloss over that with bits and pieces. Like Tony and Bruce meeting for the first time and talking in the lab. And Tony telling Bruce to strut. That was going to be a very different conversation because Tony would again recognize what was in Bruce. And that might have been the time when Bruce learned the truth. That Tony is like, hey, it's really impressive what you did. I've never seen magic applied that way. And Bruce is like, wait, what? And they go off on that. I was going to have another scene where Steve met Pepper for the first time and recognized diligence. And there was a moment of, but I loved you. And Pepper going, yes, but that wasn't really me. I recognized, because Pepper does not have all the memories of Peggy. Their names are too similar. The memories that are important to Diligence, to who she is as Diligence, would carry over. But those are not as common as you would think. Most of her memories would still be Peggy. So Pepper would recognize Steve, but there wouldn't be that deep connection that they had before. And Steve would need to learn that. And then, of course, there's all of the stuff with Natasha and Bucky and Steve and that interlocking mess. And eventually, when Bucky did get his memories back, he would be very concerned with human Steve, who was left in the Winter Court. But the captain is able to tell him that no, everything ended pretty well, all things considered. So, yeah. That's what the story might have been. The end.